6 billion euros spent by Russia going into the coffers of Western ship sellers who made a killing with Russia's effort to keep exporting oil.
Follow the money.
This is the podcast of the European Investigative Newsroom, Follow the Money. In each edition, we dive into a recent investigation exposing Europe's power brokers. From deceiving companies and financial fraudsters to influential lobbyists and corrupt politicians. I'm your host, Emma Duchatelier, recording here from Brussels. And as always, I'm joined by Alexander Fanta in Vienna. Good morning, Alex.
Hello, good morning.
In this episode, we're talking about the so-called shadow fleet, oil tankers that help Russia dodge European sanctions and keep its war economy alive. Alex, Europe's dependence on Russian gas is an ongoing struggle, not the least in your hometown, Vienna, right?
I mean, this feels very close and personal in Vienna. Austria obtained most of its gas until quite recently from Russia, despite the war. And even though the government announced that from this year on, it would no longer procure Russian gas, this is still very much an ongoing issue in some of the neighboring countries of Austria, including Hungary and Slovakia. So, you know, whatever parts of Western Europe might feel about finally, you know, cutting the cord with Russia, the economic ties, I think here in Central Eastern Europe, this feels a bit different.
And why are these countries so reluctant to give up imports from Russia?
I mean, there is really deep standing economic ties. You know, for instance, the Austrian oil company OMV, which is part state owned, has this very long term contract to buy Russian gas because there's obviously a pipeline coming all the way to Austria. That was something that there was a lot of reluctance to give up on. And I think you have a similar picture in a lot of the neighboring countries of Austria, you know, like where economic ties are deep and very hard to quickly unmoor. That is a reality that even in the third year of the war still hasn't quite sunk in.
And part of that reality is something that we're talking about today, a secretive network of old oil tankers known as the Shadow Fleet. Russia uses these ships to sidestep European sanctions and keep funding its war on Ukraine. Follow the Money led a team of 40 journalists from across Europe to trace how this so-called Shadow Fleet works. And it found that Western companies have made billions from selling these old ships to Russia. Ships that would have otherwise been sold for scrap. To dive into the story, we're joined by Follow the Money Deputy Editor-in-Chief Birte Schoolhaus, author of this story. Welcome, Birte.
Hello.
So let's start at the beginning. What exactly is this shadow fleet that you've been writing about?
Well, that's a couple of oil tankers, about 600 of them, and they're used by Russia to avoid sanctions and the oil cap. What is still allowed is for European countries to transport oil to third countries, Russian oil, but that's in order to assure that Russia won't make too much money out of that, they introduced a price cap.
That cap was introduced by the G7 and the EU to limit Russia's profits. And it started at $60 a barrel and was recently lowered to around $47 a barrel. And Birte, how does that price cap hurt Russia exactly?
Selling oil is one of the biggest sources of income. If that is cut, the idea is that it will hurt the Russian economy, and so they can't use that money for their war efforts.
Because Russia has this massive problem since the start of the war, since the sanctions kicked in. The biggest Russian export by far is oil and gas, and they need that money to fund the war effort. But how do you sell the money if you're not allowed to do it in Western countries? So this is the conundrum that Russia found itself in, and the way that they have found around it, that's quite interesting. How does one build a shadow fleet?
You would think it's very hard, but they found that way around quite quickly, actually. They used old oil tankers they had themselves, but they also bought a lot of vessels, mostly at the end of their lives, very rusty old oil vessels.
What kind of tricks do these ships use to avoid detection?
They disguise the ownership. So they are owned by companies somewhere in tax havens like the Marshall Islands, Cayman Islands. They use different flags from different countries. So it's very hard to pinpoint these ships that they're really, that the ultimate beneficial owner, that's what it's called, that those are Russians, because they're also managing companies. There's also a different crew. So, and then if that company is on some beautiful island somewhere, it's very hard to find who's actually behind that. And another thing they do is using different flags. We just recently had a story about that they, for example, also use flags from the Dutch Caribbean islands. Well, the joke is that they don't have the vessels themselves. So there are no flags of these countries, but there are companies who sell non-existing flags. So that's also a way. And then changing flags very often to disguise where they are, who they are. Another thing they do is because they are not allowed to come to European ports anymore. So what they do is, ship-to-ship transfer, they are transferring oil at sea from one vessel to the other.
This whole operation of transferring oil in the middle of the sea, but also using very old ships, it all sounds quite risky for me. Is it also a big risk for Europe?
Yeah, it is, because they're sailing through our waters, like the whole Baltic Sea, North Sea, the Mediterranean. They are very poorly maintained, these ships. And if something happens, they don't have an insurance. So if there are oil spills, the European countries have to pay for it. And there are a lot of experts who say, well, the fact that it hasn't happened yet doesn't mean that it won't happen.
Because it's very hard to obtain Western insurance for any tanker transporting Russian oil since the war, isn't it? That's also linked to the sanctions.
Yeah. And legal tankers are obliged to have that kind of insurance. But if you're sanctioned vessels, you don't get insured.
Really stood out to me in your story is that this was a huge investigation. You worked with 40 reporters from different countries, and the investigation was led by Follow the Money. Why did it take such a huge team to do this investigation?
Well, our question was, the shadow fleet, how did they get these tankers? Where did they come from? And our hypothesis was that there must be Western companies involved. So we started looking into a lot of data, but we saw that there are a lot of European countries involved, like ship brokers, owners from different countries, and we needed more information that we could gather from the Netherlands. So that was one aspect to get more reporters on board. And the other aspect was we wanted to find how much money was made by selling these vessels, how much money Western companies made by selling these vessels to the shadow fleet.
How did this multi-country effort help you to cover so many different aspects?
Yeah, I think that the most interesting part of this investigation is that every partner, we collected the data together, but then every country, every media outlet made a story of their own about their country, the companies in their country that were involved. So taking all of this together gives much, much more coverage than we could have done. I think what made this investigation also important was that Greek companies, they made most of the money. That Greece is a shipping nation, but the owners are also very, very powerful. So for the outlets, it was very important that we, like a bigger international media, were behind them and could back them and help them with the data, because they were threatened immediately with like legal threats.
You arrived at a crazy estimate, though. What was the figure? It was 6 billion euros.
Exactly.
Spent by Russia, going into the coffers of Western ship sellers who made a killing with Russia's efforts to keep exporting oil.
For ships that were, well, at the end of their lives, basically.
Rusty, old vessels, barely shipworthy, crewed by whomever they could find. Who's still on these ships? Who's still doing this job?
Well, there are a lot of people, actually, there are Ukrainians on these vessels, but also a lot of people from Asia. They are hired by middlemen. They often don't know on what ships they're working. And colleagues in the UK found that the working conditions are very poor on these ships.
Isn't it a dark irony that there is a lot of Ukrainians working to keep the Russian war machine going?
And even Ukrainian agencies who are hiring people to work on these ships. Yeah, that's bizarre.
They were also naming specific owners, specific companies in Greece involved in this, making it possible for the public to finally understand who's actually the ones profiting. I think that's a crucial aspect. And
for the big companies, it's not forbidden to sell ships, but for us, it was important to tell the story because with these vessels, these companies are helping Russia to keep that shadow fleet afloat.
So we have these ships transporting Russian oil when they're not supposed to. What rules exist to prevent people from selling ships that will end up being used for shipping Russian oil?
The ships are not allowed to visit European harbors and ports. The EU wanted to introduce a rule that they also had to say in the contract that the ships will never be used in the shadow fleet. And that rule is not established because there were countries like Greece, like Malta, that said that makes it so difficult for our industry. It will hurt us more than the Russians, so that they didn't want that.
EU has recently introduced a new sanctions package, which is the 18th sanctions package. And as we already discussed, this lowers the oil price cap even further and targets individual vessels in the shadow fleet by banning those specific ships from entering European ports. And Alex, do you see that sanctions package as taking those final steps and really getting all in on this?
I think not one single sanctions package can achieve that, at least not the ones we've seen so far. I'm not sure what Birte thinks about it, but I think, still more decisive steps are probably needed to go all the way.
We can try to limit it, and that's what the EU is trying to do. It's still that balance, trying to hit Russia as hard as possible without hitting your own economy. And now they're trying to sanction more and more vessels, individual vessels, so that they are also may not be used to transport oil.
So they impact individual vessels. Do you imagine that simply a new shadow fleet pops up? Will they just use different vessels to transport the oil instead?
Well, I think it's kind of a whack-a-mole game. Well, some vessels disappear, others pop up, and then it takes some time to identify them that new vessels are being used. But on the other hand, it takes quite a lot of time to build new vessels, and those are quite expensive, and they are not endlessly old vessels around. I think what experts say is they see that the sanctions on individual vessels are much more effective than that oil cap, for example.
What has the political reaction been to your stories? What is there any sense that, might do something about this?
It's difficult. In some countries, I think it was in Germany, there was quite an outrage. They didn't know. Politicians didn't know about this. But in other countries, I think that's one of the reasons why it took so long to get new sanctions is that there are also countries like Greece or Malta that are dependent on the shipping industry and transport industry.
And at the same time, we did make tighter rules and we do have our efforts to prevent things like the shadow fleet, and it still happens. And in this regard, can we say, okay, the rules are just not tight enough or people are not playing by the rules? Who can we blame in the shadow fleet story? Who has the responsibility here to stop this from happening?
Well, I think if there was one person or one entity to blame, it was quite easy to stop it. I think there are different factors. And discussion that we had was like, okay, it's not against the law to sell these vessels. So how much of a story do we have? And that was something we discussed quite a lot. But then on the other end, we said, well, there's also a very big moral part in this, because they all said we sold them to some middlemen. We didn't know that the vessels would end up in the shadow fleet. But then on the other hand, I mean, if you're selling a vessel that's, they know that they will more or less worthless, and all of a sudden you get millions for them, well, you can ask yourself, why is that and who's going to use them? There are still people who profit from it.
The ship traders, maybe.
Ship traders, but also people who are selling false flags, people who are transporting that oil. I mean, in a short period, if you're not caught, you can make a lot of money.
Do you think they generally know that what they're doing is funding Putin's war chest?
I mean, they all say that they don't. And it's well, who am I to say that they're lying? But I think they know the oil trade very well, and they know oil prices very well, and they know the prices for the vessels very well. But on the other hand, if you're a shipping company and you can sell your old vessels, it's like one expert made the comparison with trading old cars. And if you have an old car and you think it's worth 2,000 euros, and then there comes someone who says, well, but I'll give you 4,000 for it. Of course you do it. And you will sell all the other, cars that you still have also to that guy because he pays double.
Should raise some suspicion though. I think it's really interesting how, you know, grappling with this problem of how to defund the Russian war operation, measures have been taken upon measures, and it's never quite clear what has a real effect or not. It's also the Russian economy has proven to be a lot more resilient as many people expected. Also because so much of it is revolving around fossil fuels. So, you know, a more diversified economy might be hit by losing, you know, 10% of revenue from tourism or trade or whatever. But the Russian economy being so focused on this one resource, has shown that it's also very easy to commoditize. You know, everyone in the world buys a certain amount of oil. So,
but I think that's the most difficult part. Russia is very much dependent on selling fossil fuels, but we are also very much dependent on those. So it's very, because when the war started, I mean, we all saw that it was very hard to for all the Western countries to, it was simply impossible to say, well, we'll stop with Russian fossil products all of a sudden. That didn't happen.
And this discussion is something we see, of course, in the shadow fleet. But in general, there's a lot of difficult to reach consensus within the EU about what to do in terms of sanctioning Russia. Also, when it comes to gas, for example, in 2024 alone, EU countries paid over $23 billion for Russian gas, which is more than they gave to Ukraine in military aid. The EU is still importing many pesticides from Russia. And our colleague Krein recently also found that companies such as PepsiCo and Mars and ING are still paying billions in taxes to Russia. And why is it so hard for Europe to really stop funding Putin's war chest?
There are so many different trade and money flows into Russia. I mean, oil is one of the biggest and fossil fuels. But that would mean, like you just said, you really would have to make a rule that no company is allowed to do any business in Russia. Last year, we had a story about a Dutch company, Philips, that's still selling medical devices, I think, or they still had, they traded some medical stuff, and that's not forbidden. And I mean, then you get to that point when you have dual use stuff that where it's not quite sure if it can be used for warfare. And so it's quite hard to establish these rules that would stop it totally and not affect our own economy, because these that pay taxes to, in Russia, they also pay taxes here. Not so much. They're trying to pay as little as possible, but still, I mean, yeah.
Alex, if you look at the European map, where would you say the different interests lie? What countries have what interests and what are they vouching for?
I think, you know, we've seen a strong push from certain larger Western countries, you know, like the UK, which is no longer in the EU, but is still an important player, has been pushing to go hard on Russia. Other countries have been quite forceful, such as the Scandinavian countries, France to a certain extent. But then, you know, Germany, Europe's largest economy, has been, you know, sometimes a bit more equivocating, saying, okay, well, you know, kind of, should we really break ties with Russia completely over this? And, as already mentioned before, you know, Central Eastern European countries, including, you know, Hungary, but also even Austria, Slovakia, have been a lot more skeptical, a lot more like kind of trying to see things from their own, economic perspective, which is still very much, aligned with Russian interests to a certain extent. So, the picture is like the EU has been surprisingly cohesive and was able to build a united front to a certain extent, but still, kind of breaking decades or even centuries of economic ties with Russia has not been as easy as some people might have thought. As we all know, kicking any habit is very hard to do. Quitting smoking is hard to do. Certainly quitting Russian fossil fuels has been a tricky thing to do. Some countries, Germany notably, decided to pay a massive economic price for getting out of Russian gas, building new LNG terminals on the fly, paying a huge markup for US and Canadian LNG as opposed to Russian gas to be easily shipped in via existing pipelines. So the question I think that should be reasonably asked is, what kind of economic price are we willing to pay? We already have paid large parts of it, but are we now, taking the final steps and getting really all in on this? Are we willing to bear that cost?
And that's where we'll leave it for today's episode.
Thank you so much for joining us, Birte. And Alex and I will be back soon for another episode. You can find this story by Birte and also all the follow-up stories on the Shadow Fleet on ftm.eu and also in the show notes.
You've listened to the podcast of Follow the Money. Our watchdog journalism is funded by our members. Subscribe and support European investigative journalism.